Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruryak. Sacramento police officer Tara O'Sullivan died last night in an incident that began as a domestic disturbance call. She had just graduated from the police academy in December. She was 26 years old. In 2017, she was part of the first class to graduate from the new Law Enforcement Candidate Scholars Program at Sacramento State. She then graduated from Sac State in 2018 with a BA in Child Development. Sac State President Robert Nelson today wrote, "Our hearts go out to Tara's family, friends, classmates, and fellow officers. This exceptional young officer will be remembered by the Hornet family for her intelligence, her commitment to public service, and her bravery." Cap Radio reporter Sammy Kayola followed the events through the night last night. She's with me in the studio. Thanks for being here today, Sammy. And I guess the latest news is that there is a suspect in custody.
That's correct. So he was safely detained, so he's not in the neighborhood anymore. We don't really know a lot about this person other than he was male and that it was an hours-long ordeal trying to make that area safe because this person was armed, they think, with a rifle and was sporadically shooting throughout the day and the evening.
At first, the storylines were a little bit confusing because a lot of this happened last evening, but the first call came before noon. And then how did it unfold?
Yeah, so it started at about 11:43 a.m., it's very precise, with a call to a different place that was actually in the Ardner-Cade area, and it was a disturbance between a male and a female. And so it started with that, but then we know sometime later in the afternoon, the female needed to get some belongings from a property that was in North Sacramento. And so officers responded to be on standby while she collected those items, I guess because they were, you know, worried it might be an unsafe situation. And so we know that Tara O'Sullivan was part of at least that second group of officers that joined around 5:41 p.m.
There was a shooting and then a space of time before she was able to be transported. So we're going to hear more about that in a moment, but just a little of the chronology there.
Yeah, so we know that the shots began ringing out a little after 6 p.m., and we knew that the officer, O'Sullivan, was struck by gunfire. But then, you know, they weren't able to send an armored vehicle in for her until about 40 minutes after that.
I want to take this through some of the sound that you were able to gather, and there was a middle-of-the-night press conference. But let's start with the fact that once Officer O'Sullivan had been transported to the med center, it was still what they consider, what, an active shooter situation?
Yeah. So she had been transported, and people were starting to gather at the UC Davis Medical Center. So I was there, but there were still many officers on the scene. I also went to the scene, and there were ambulances, a lot of streets blocked off, caution tape. I talked to neighbors who were just sort of unsettled and confused. People were being evacuated to an elementary school for safety. So you had sort of that active scene there, and then this other scene at the med center. And then when the press conference happened, which was around 12:30, a little after midnight, Officer Vance Chandler was very clear that this was still happening.
We do believe that this subject does have a rifle, and he has shot this rifle multiple times, obviously shot and killed one of our officers. Not too long ago, he was still firing this weapon, so we do want help in relaying the message that the area is still dangerous at this time, and we do not want people in the area because we do not want anybody else being harmed.
Again, that was from the middle of the night last night. The suspect is in custody now, so there is no longer danger or warning to people in the neighborhood. But what you heard there was the acknowledgement that by that time, Officer O'Sullivan had been pronounced dead.
Right, and that was the first official announcement that she had died. And it was very profound moment. Mayor Steinberg was there, Councilmember Angelique Ashby was there, and they really recognized her for her bravery and talked a lot about the service that she'd done. And, you know, at this point, I'd already been at the hospital And I was getting the sense there was a hearse. You know, there were people gathered looking like they were ready to do a procession. And that is what they ended up doing a little bit later in the night.
Here's a little bit of what Dave Paletta told you at this point in time last night.
We're devastated tonight. There are no words to convey the depth of sadness we feel or how heartbroken we are for our family of our young, brave officer. The men and women of our department will continue to do our jobs to protect the community, and we will draw from the strength and courage of Tara. Our hearts are with Tara's family, whose pain can hardly be imagined. Our department has been called on before to shoulder the immense grief of losing an officer, and we have done so in honor. I'm confident we will do so again, and in doing so, we will honor Tara and the courage that she showed yesterday.
So that was Dave Paletta. He was the deputy chief of the Sacramento Police Department. He was acting as a spokesperson last night. And he addressed the questions about why it took so long to get to Tara after she had been shot.
Which was somewhere in the realm of just under an hour?
It was about 40 minutes.
Okay.
45 minutes. And it sounds like it was a pretty complex situation in there. And here's how he describes it.
You know, the first thing you think of is what safety equipment can we put between our officers and the person firing or the area that's getting fired upon. And in this case, we try to use an armored vehicle, but because of the location that where she was at, made it very difficult to get the armored vehicle there. But we don't do any good if we send personnel up just to have more people hurt or injured. And so some of these things, unfortunately, they take time and you strategically have to think through them. And of course, you always have the terrain that sometimes you have to navigate too.
So at this press conference, you said that the mayor spoke, and I think from the mayor's perspective, looking at the community, it was the experience of the loss of this officer, the loss of Natalie Corona not so long ago, and before that, there had been quite a gap of time.
Yeah, he actually did tie together those two officer deaths, Natalie Corona, as you mentioned, and gave us a little history on that.
It has been 20 years since our department has lost one of its own in the line of duty. But our last two academy classes have each lost an officer in the line of duty. Both Natalie Corona and Tara O'Sullivan had bright futures ahead of them. They were committed to our communities, committed to protect and serve selflessly. They had big dreams and even bigger hearts.
Again, that was Mayor Steinberg from the middle of the night. Sacramento City Police Officer Tara O'Sullivan died in the line of duty. And there will be unfolding news about this. One thing we didn't mention is much detail about the suspect at this point.
Yeah, that's because we don't have much at this point. But do stay tuned throughout the day. It's something we're hoping to gather more information on. We don't know much about him, but he is in custody. So that will be unfolding. And we're also looking to learn a little bit more about Tara O'Sullivan and the programs that she was in and sort of what this says about, you know, the police force and diversity and community relations, because that seemed to come up a lot last night.
There was a remarkable spontaneous procession, I understand, from the med center once her body was being moved. And I think it's in situations like this where nobody really even needs to be called. It's just there. It's a brotherhood and sisterhood, sort of a humanity coming together.
Yeah, by the time I showed up, there were dozens of people, you know, people in uniform, people not in uniform, consoling each other, you know, and just sort of waiting to pay tribute that way. Yeah.
All right, Sammy, thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks for your coverage. And again, we'll continue to be on the story throughout the day. You can follow it online and on air at capradio.org.
Thanks, Beth.
Now to this week's Capitol Chat, and we're going to shift gears and talk about California's Attorney General. He's been speaking about the need for more diversity. State government reporter Scott Rodd is with me in the studio for that story. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Beth.
So what's the issue in the California Department of Justice? And maybe the better question is, what are the numbers in this story?
So the issue is that California is a very diverse state. However, the attorneys in the Attorney General's office don't reflect that diversity. So to give you some numbers, California's Hispanic population makes up about 40% of the people in the state. However, in the Attorney General's office, only 7% of the attorneys are Hispanic or Latino. White Californians are 40%, or I should actually say 37% of the population. However, in the Attorney General's office, they make up about 70% of the attorneys. African Americans make up about 6% of the state's population. They're about 3% of the attorneys in the Attorney General's office. So you can see a disparity there between the diversity in the state and the diversity or the lack of diversity or not as much diversity in the attorneys that represent the people of the state.
Can you take this a little further and talk about the issues that arise or could potentially arise with a staff that doesn't reflect the picture of the true state population?
Sure. So diversity is important in any workplace, right? Studies have shown that more creativity and more better workflow happens when there's diversity. There's a different dimension to it, though, in the Attorney General's office because they have to represent the interests of the people of California in the court system.
Right.
So that means bringing cases, but that also means defending the state in certain cases and identifying which cases to jump into in recognizing that certain cases will have an impact and sometimes a disproportionate impact on certain communities. So the concern is that if the attorneys don't reflect the people of the state, they're not going to have the background experience and the lived experience to say, okay, this legal issue, this specific case will have a big impact on this group of people, or they may not be able to understand how to approach a certain case that will have an impact on those communities. And I spoke with Bianca Sierra Wolf. She's with a group called Change Lawyers, which is a group that aims to break down barriers in the legal profession. And she summed it up pretty succinctly.
How can we say that our justice system works for all Californians if it's not reflective of that state?
So again, underscoring that issue of if there isn't diversity in the Attorney General's office, how can they fully represent the diversity of the state?
To be fair, this is a problem at the county level, too, in a number of district attorneys' offices. But do you have any sense of how the county issue with diversity compares to what the state's dealing with in the numbers you just described?
You know, that's a great question, and that's something that I hope to pursue in follow-up reporting. This was something that came onto my radar somewhat by happenstance. I was at a state personnel board hearing for a totally unrelated story, and the HR representative from the Attorney General's office was testifying about this issue, and it just struck me as a really interesting topic. So I pursued the state-level side, and I think it would definitely be worth looking at, okay, what's happening at the county level as well.
So I'm assuming that the DOJ is tracking these numbers. And when you engage the Attorney General in a conversation about this, was there any surprise or was there complete awareness that the situation existed?
You know, there was a good amount of awareness. The Attorney General, Javier Becerra, didn't shy away from acknowledging this issue. And it's actually something that his office has made a priority to change. And this is what he had to say about it.
We have to admit, there aren't as many people of color who are attorneys in California as you might think, given the general population distribution. That doesn't give you an excuse not to hire people who are from that background if you can, but it may make it tougher to fill a pool of qualified candidates from those particular communities.
So there you hear him saying, you know, this is an issue. This can be even a challenge to get a diverse pool to choose attorneys from to fill the office. But that's no excuse. There should be proactive efforts made to for recruitment, but also to engage
into law schools.
Exactly. Going to law schools.
Into the education leading up to the possibility.
Exactly. And he even said in high school and colleges, making it clear to students from diverse backgrounds that you can be an attorney. You can go into this profession and paving that road for them.
So this has been a two-part story for you. It's not up online yet, but it will be later today?
Yes, later today. So the second part is airing today, and listeners can find it online this afternoon.
Okay, and as you said, it's a to be continued because answering one question raises two or three or more.
Yes, as with most stories, once you start to ask questions, those only start to open more doors.
I'm talking to Cap Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd. Governor Gavin Newsom issued an apology this week. It's worth noting in this week's Capital Chat. Was there anything specific that prompted the timing of this?
So I haven't been able to identify something specific that prompted Governor Gavin Newsom's apology to the Native American community in California, aside from the fact that this appears to be long overdue. This, the governor's office has said, and from what I could see, this is the case, the first time that the state of California has apologized for some of the atrocities that have taken place against Native Americans in California throughout the last 150 plus years. So as far as a specific incident goes or some sort of anniversary, that there doesn't appear to be anything, but Governor Gavin Newsom made it clear that he felt that this was long overdue.
He met with tribal leaders on Tuesday, and here's a bit of what he said.
We apologize on behalf of the citizens of California, to all California Native Americans, for the many instances of violence, maltreatment, neglect, murder inflicted on the tribes.
Beyond his words, what else is involved in this apology, and what does it mean in a bigger sense?
So the plan is to set up what's being called a Truth and Healing Council. The idea is to allow the Native American community to work with the state to identify inconsistencies in the historical record and correct the historical record to make sure that those atrocities are not forgotten, to make sure that these instances of violence, as the governor said, are not lost in the history books. As far as hard policy goes, as far as allocation of resources goes, there isn't anything yet in the as far as reflected in the executive order from Governor Newsom. And this was something that was acknowledged by some of the tribal leaders. From what I could see, everyone at this gathering from these tribes appreciated Governor Gavin Newsom's apology. However, at least one tribal leader said, you know, this apology is very important, but actions speak louder than words. And we would like to see follow-up to this. What sort of resources may be allocated? What sort of follow-up and perhaps money and resources dedicated to this issue?
All right. You've had a busy week. There's even more reporting on other topics on our website. So I'll refer everybody for more state government news to capradio.org. Thank you again for joining us on a busy day.
Thank you.
That is Cap Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd. And again, capradio.org for continuing coverage today and more news. And you are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.